I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and General Government. And if we have no other business, I'm going to move right into a work session on Senate Bill 1033. Dana, you want to review?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 1033 requires school districts and schools to have AEDs, automated external defibrillators. And we have two amendments before us today, dash twos and threes. And the dash twos extend the implementation date for this to 2015, I believe. And the dash threes define what a school campus is. I think trying to identify that not every building, not every school building would have to have an AED, but that a campus itself would have to have an AED. You do have fiscal and revenue statements on both of those amendments.
Okay. Senator Atkinson is here with us, but standing by.
Any questions or discussion on this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonnici.
I did look at the fiscal analysis, and because that was my question about how much will this cost schools, and I think I'm pretty confident that many of them will already have the AEDs, and they'll be able to get them for what looks like a very reasonable cost.
By the time we get to this. I think that's a good point. We passed a bill in 2005 encouraging them, in effect, to look for donations, foundations, and contributions for AEDs. A lot of them do have them now. They don't have enough, in my opinion, but who knows where they'll be in 5 years. But they'll at least, I hope, have their campuses covered. We're not going to do amendment dash ones. Senator Morris?
We're not.
Yep.
Which one's the dash one?
Is there any concern about the impact on small schools?
Well, I think with the definition of campuses, this really was one of the issues that I raised. What does this mean? Every school should have an AED or school districts, because you have, you know, Burnt River and you have Beaverton. Do they each get one? But is that specified in terms of, I mean, is this going to be an unfunded mandate on them or a burden on them in 2015?
I guess it's, Mr. Chair, a matter of proportionality. If you have a school in Mitchell with 30 students versus a school with 1,500 students, there's a proportionality issue and a disproportionate cost per student. And a differential probability of need. So it would be a concern that I would register.
Other discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I do like the three simply because I think it clarifies that you could have a school with multiple buildings, and by saying campus, it means that each school campus has to have one. So if you had like three buildings in a grade school, I'm afraid that the original language would mean that each building might have to have one. And which was the reason we the threes were an attempt to clarify. So that it was just, you know, if you I've got grade schools that would have like three separate and distinct buildings. Should each one of those separate and distinct buildings have one, or should the school have one? And so by saying campus, it would mean that just the school had to have one, not each building. So that was the attempt that the threes were attempting. That's what we were trying to do with the threes.
Mr. Chair, are we planning to adopt the threes as well?
Yes, twos and threes.
Twos and threes, okay.
So
are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill.
Senator Cruz.
1033.
Senator Cruz moves to adopt the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1033. Discussion? Seeing none. Objection? Seeing none. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendment to Senate Bill 1033.
Senator Cruz moves to adopt the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 1033. Discussion? Seeing none, objection? Seeing none, the dash threes are amended.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1033 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1033 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, reluctantly, I realize I'm a on the bill, but thinking about the impact on small schools, I do have that concern of the proportionality of the need. And okay. at this juncture, I will be a no. Would like to have further discussion with some of these small schools.
Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
No.
Vice
Chair Cruz? Aye.
Chair Hatch?
Aye. Motion passes. Senator Atkinson will carry the bill. And close the work session on Senate Bill 1033. At 4 o'clock, we have scheduled to take up Senate Joint Resolution 48. So just so everybody's prepared that we'll might have to interrupt things when we get to that point. So let's move into our omnibus bill, Senate Bill 98. This is a bill that has
many parts.
Yeah, I think we're up to how many amendments here? Five. And Administrator Richardson, if you would not mind giving us a summary of each.
Mr. Chair, members of committee, would you like to open a work session, Mr.
Yeah, I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 988.
The committee today has four amendments in front of them. The first has been in front of the committee before. It adds the Oregon pre-kindergarten program providers to a pilot project for Head Start. Declares emergency would take effect upon passage. There is no fiscal impact or revenue impact from that amendment. Do you want to kind of break these up or just do them in one big group?
Why don't you just go through
them? Okay. The dash fives also have been in front of the committee before. They deal with the issue of students who don't have a place of residence in some foreign exchange students who live in a school district operated dorm. This amendment, if adopted and passed, would apply to the 2009-2010 and 2010-2011 school years. There's a minimal fiscal impact, and a revenue statement has been issued. It is at your seats. The dash 8 amendments were before us before, brought forward by Senator Whitsett, adding a school district to those public agencies that might finance treatment works. There's no fiscal or revenue impact from that amendment. The dash 10s have not been before the committee today, but a version of them have. They deal with the qualified school construction bonds. The 10s really specify that type of bond as opposed to broader types of revenue bonds. And they repeal the authorization for districts to enter into diversion agreements to get the qualified school construction bonds in 2029. There is a minimal fiscal impact associated with that amendment. It is available to you, just hot off the presses. No revenue impact from that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and we'll be getting the tens here shortly.
We should have the tens.
They're in your packet.
Okay, everyone has them.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's take these one at a time. The dash one amendment.
Dash four.
Pardon me?
Dash one.
Dash four.
Dash four.
I'm sorry. Pre-kindergarten amendment.
Dash four.
Yes.
Okay.
Public hearing work session.
Work session.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendment to Senate Bill 988.
Senator Cruz moves the dash four amendment to Senate Bill 988. Discussion?
Questions?
I'm good with everything here.
Seeing none, is there any objection? The amendment is adopted.
Chair, I move the dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 988.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 5s to Senate Bill 988. Is there any discussion on this bill, the pre-kindergarten program?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, this is the
foreign student.
Foreign exchange. So sorry. You know what? I'm looking at an old version
Let's get you an updated one.
foreign exchange in small in school district dormitories.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll support this amendment. I just think it's unfortunate that we have to rely on bringing in foreign exchange students to support a small school district. We should be able to do better than that. But I understand the need, and I will support the amendment.
I concur, Senator. This is terrible policy, but we're sort of held hostage here for the sake of these small school districts and those students to at least carry this out through the rest of this biennium, and then we'll look at it again in the next biennium. Further discussion?
Yeah, because I do think, Mr. Chair, that this small school formula is up for reauthorization, so it's going to be a full discussion in 11.
Seeing none. Any objections to the Dash 5 amendment? Seeing none, the Dash 5s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 988.
Senator Cruz moves a Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 988, adding school district to those public agencies that may finance treatment works. This is a little tricky. This is Senator Whitsitt's bill. Any questions?
This is making some activities that have been going on illegal, so it's a good thing.
Discussion? Further discussion?
The Dash 8?
Yeah.
Objections? Seeing none, the Dash 8 amendments are adopted to Senate Bill 988.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 10 amendment to Senate Bill 988.
Can I comment, Mr. Chair?
Please do.
This amendment in this form hasn't been before the committee before, and there may be members of the audience that would have input and insight into it.
Let's bring up Ken Armstrong, if he's still here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Ken Armstrong, representing Seattle Northwest Securities Corporation. At your last committee meeting on this bill, we testified that we were in the process of working through resolution of some language on the amendments with the Treasurer's Office. We have successfully done that, and we have an amendment in front of you, which in most respects is perfectly acceptable to everyone. The one final wrinkle that appeared, just within about 2 hours ago, is that there's a citation to the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, the ARRA, that is possibly going to be changing at the federal level, and we are concerned that if we have that citation in statute and then we have a site change at the federal level, we could end up having a conflict. We were not able to get legislative counsel to get that processed as quickly as you're hearing today. What we would ask for is the committee's indulgence to move the Dash 10s, which are not even conceptually, in every other respect, perfectly acceptable to my client and also to the Treasurer's Office, and they can certainly speak for themselves on that because they are here. And then on the House side, we would make that very technical change and would come back before you for reapproval.
Okay, and we do have Hannah, if you'd like to weigh in on that, as well as the Treasurer, unless you're an agreement.
They're okay.
Was there somebody else?
They'd given their thumbs up and then they went like that, so it's.
Okay, so I'm Hannah Lai. I represent Legislative Council, and the issue here is the reference to a federal law. And the reason that references to federal law sometimes is problematic for us is delegation of authority issues. We don't want the feds to be changing their law and causing that to make a change in Oregon law as a result. And so that's why we try and avoid that. So the general rule for the most part is when we do have a reference to a federal law, that the status of that law at the date of the enactment of our Oregon law is the status of the law that we're going to be incorporating into our law. So, however, the Recovery Act is on the date that you pass the Dash 10s or whatever the final form is going to be the form that will continue forward. So if it is amended, it kind of depends what the amendments are. If we're going to be looking at huge changes, and I'm not certain what the future amendments are, that may start to cause some issues. But if they keep kind of generally where they are, where we aren't looking at a change in federal law affecting a change in Oregon law, it could be okay. But definitely the safest route is always to try and avoid the federal reference if you can.
Okay. And the Treasurer's Office?
Would it be okay to explain why we want to amend it?
Sure.
I'm hoping to avoid this. For the record, Laura Lockwood McCall from the Debt Management Division of the State Treasurer's Office. The U.S. Senate introduced some legislation on February 9th that would modify the tax credit portion of the qualified school bond program and allow just a direct subsidy, just like the rest of the Build America Bonds program. And that would make it easier to find investors, but it would still be qualified school districts for qualified construction. So we don't really know how it's going to emerge, but we think by just adding the language that's very much tied to qualified school bonds, that we want to make sure that if they change it from tax credit bonds to direct subsidy bonds, that we're still covered. Otherwise, you would have done a great thing for school districts, and if the law changes and it's an even better program, we wouldn't be able to take advantage of it because the legislature won't be in session. And we didn't change the goalpost of only for 2010, and the plan would be once we see what the Senate and the House do at the federal level, we could come back next session and come up with whatever the program's going to be permanently. But it's simply a question of whether you want to help the small school districts in a pooled fashion take advantage of current or soon-to-be current federal law.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion to adopt the Dash 10. Senator Bonamici?
No, thanks.
See none. Objections? See none. The Dash 10 amendment is adopted to Senate Bill 988.
Well, Mr. Chair, with the full understanding, this is relatively easy to write at this point, is it? I mean, this is just a tweaky little thing, correct? To make this a... Huh? Okay. Okay. With the full understanding that this minor fix can easily happen on the House side, I will move Senate Bill 988 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 988 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify the comment that I made about the Dash 5 amendment before we move this bill forward. I certainly don't want anyone to misinterpret my comment as somehow being against foreign exchange students. I think exchange programs are great and beneficial. I just want to clarify that if they're necessary to maintain a small school district, I think that's problematic. But I do definitely support foreign exchange programs and don't want anyone to misinterpret my comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris?
I'm fine. Well, I was just going to make some comment about the Dash 7s, but I'll pass on that. Thank you.
Dash 7.
Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 988 passed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. I will carry it. And I think we should go to the public hearing and work session on Senate Joint Resolution 48, if we can get that one started.
Mr. Chair, could we stand recess for just a moment for me to get the sponsor on that?
All right. We'll wait, Senator Pozanski, and we'll just stand by for a few minutes.
and work session on SJR 48. Senator Przanski is here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Floyd Przanski, State Senator, District 4, includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. We're here on SJR 48, and for those who are familiar or remember back this last session, we had another SJR, it was number 4, which addressed most of the issues that are in SJR 48. That was a bill that was introduced at the request of one of the circuit court judges who is also serves as a instructing slash professor. I know the terminology is not correct for academia, but he worked and taught a course at the law school at the University of Oregon. And what we realized is that because judicial branch is a separate branch of government, there was some concern as to whether or not that could cause and impose a problem for individuals who are in the judicial branch who want to participate in the field of teaching, which would be part of the executive branch. It is my understanding that one of the things that cannot happen or does not happen is any type of compensation for those individuals. And, of course, for those individuals who put the time in and the effort to actually teach a course at that type of level, it takes a lot of time and commitment not only in the classroom but also in preparation. So that's the reason the bill came forward last session, and just I wanted to bring you up to speed on that, and also that the vote that came out of the Senate was 28-1. And what happened when it got over to the House side, there it was toward the end of the session. It was first read on June 25th, and the House decided at that point they didn't think it had enough time to really push the bill through, and I was instructed at that time that we should consider this in the February session, and here we are today. So it's my pleasure and my honor to have two individuals here that are going to give supporting testimony for the bill, the Dean of the Law School at the University of Oregon, Margie Parrish, and also the Attorney General, John Kroger. There is a dash one that has been requested, which I assume your administrator will go over. But what that would do is actually include and allow for community college districts to also have the ability and the flexibility to have people within the judicial branch to also serve in the capacity at a junior or at a community college. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll ask, I guess, you're not your schedule is
the dean.
So then let the dean go first, and then we'll follow up with Attorney General Kroger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I speak on behalf of Senate Joint Resolution 48, which would permit Oregon institutions of higher education, such as the University of Oregon School of Law, to hire Oregon judges to teach courses for us. Currently, as the state's only public law school, I'll point out that we're disadvantaged in the fact that we cannot employ Oregon judges to teach our students, and we would very much like to. Judges obviously provide an important source of information to students. If we were able to, we would employ them as adjunct instructors to teach such courses as state constitutional law, Oregon practice and procedure, and so forth. Those courses and others like them are sometimes taught at the other two law schools in Oregon that are private law schools, and so they are permitted, of course, to employ Oregon judges to teach. Passage of this resolution would simply enable us and other institutions, public institutions of higher education in Oregon, to do so. As you know, the current situation is that the Oregon Constitution prohibits us from hiring these judges. 20 years ago, the Oregon Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution to include this prohibition on hiring of Oregon judges by public institutions, and that's the case of In the Matter of Sawyer that's in my written testimony. In that case, however, the court did note that that provision of the Oregon Constitution had been amended to enable legislators to teach in institutions, public institutions in the state, and so it seems appropriate to for us to permit judges to do likewise. And I'll just turn it over to the Attorney General. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. I'm John Kroger. I'm the Attorney General of Oregon, and I'd just like to speak very briefly in favor of the joint resolution. It is obviously of immense benefit to law students to have an opportunity to learn directly from members of the bench. I say that really in my capacity as a former law professor. It makes an enormous difference for them to have an opportunity to learn directly from those who make decisions on the bench. And we have kind of an anomaly now where members of the state bench can teach at Lewis and Clark and at Willamette. That is something that both of those schools, I speak as a Lewis and Clark faculty member on leave, both of those schools really benefit from that. And it seems unfair to the students who are pursuing a legal education at our one state supported law school to not have that opportunity as well. And so I think this would be something that would directly benefit law students at the University of Oregon, as well as, you know, students at other educational facilities that might benefit from this as well. And so I'm very much in support and appreciate Senator Brzozinski for bringing it forward.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. It's slightly different. I went to Willamette, and probably one of my best classes was business law, taught by a lawyer from Salem who had on-the-ground experience. And, you know, that sort of stuff is just invaluable. My question to Senator Brzozinski, we did this same bill last time. It passed out of this committee unanimously. And then was sent to rules and passed out unanimously, and then passed on the floor 28-1-1. My question is, why does it have to go to rules? I mean, this looks fairly straightforward to me.
Yeah,
so.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I believe the protocol on the measures that are going to be referred to the voters that will have to go to a vote have traditionally gone through the rules committee for... I guess a second look is the best term I can use. And the rules, it actually made it through. And if I remember correctly, I think Senator Farioli made a suggestion that we tighten it down. And we did, if I remember correctly, that was during the rules process. But answer your question, I believe it's just more of the protocol that if something is going to be referred to the voters, that normally the rules committee is similar to what the Judiciary Committee, with I guess a good example is the bill, Senate Bill 999, which is regarding veterans who may be allowed or permitted to go into a diversion program through the criminal justice system. That started in our Veterans Committee, but because it deals with procedural matters in the courts, it did have a subsequent referral to my committee, and we expect that one to actually go out tomorrow as well.
Okay. Rules are... Same rules committee, same result. It just seems like a potentially unnecessary step, but that's fine.
I didn't realize, but it sounds like it does have a subsequent referral to rules,
yes,
and so that's what I would say.
Well, just in addition to, because it is a referral for the Constitution, it will need ballot titles, it will need explanatory statements, and so the rules committee will sort that out,
yeah,
and how that, whether Mr. Kroger will write it or how that works, but those companion pieces have to be put with this.
Okay. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you
Thank
very
you.
Much.
I have Joyce Garrett and signed up.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, my name is Joyce Garrett. I serve on the board of Central Oregon Community College in Bend, and I am a retired dean of education from Boise State University. And I'm here today representing OCCA, the Oregon Community College Association, and we would like to ask you to consider passing this bill and including community colleges in the bill, because we believe that community colleges deserve the same consideration that the State Board of Higher Ed and the local school districts would have in hiring a sitting judge. I think it's easy to say that community colleges, like all of our universities, seek the most expert faculty that they can find, and there's no question that a sitting judge would add a value, added experience for students, and they would add to the pool of well-qualified candidates that we seek at community college level. And we do have a number of courses that could benefit from this, and mainly in criminal justice, but also business law, as was suggested previously, public safety, environmental management, I'm an environmental ed teacher, corrections, and juvenile corrections also. So we have a number of courses across the 17 universities that could benefit if you were to pass this measure. Thank you very much.
Hold on. Questions?
I do just have one question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
And I'm not sure if there's any resolution to this in this bill, but the irony is that we're permitting judges to teach in K through 12, but they have no avenue to teach short of TSPC certification.
No. Well,
kind of an academic observation.
Yeah, I would have to agree that this makes some sense if you're going to do higher education in law schools, that there are some courses, business law, criminal justice, in which this may be useful. I don't know. I don't know that it should be a barrier, I guess is what I'm saying, in those rare cases.
Well, I can speak from personal experience. When I was at the University of Oregon, I had a number of school law-related classes that were taught by an attorney. Made all the difference in the world in terms of the kind of education that we got.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I would say in response to Senator Morris's comment, that's the way it is now, but we could change that. And so by having this here, it would allow the opportunity, if indeed we make modifications in the future in how we deal with K-12 education. So,
Mr. Chair, I wasn't raising this as a suggestion that we remove it. It's just an observation that we're creating an avenue here that's largely foreclosed.
Ms. Garrett, thank you for coming down and testifying. Okay, so this bill does have an amendment,
mm-hmm,
and a subsequent referral to rules.
And we are in work session, correct?
We are in work session.
Oh, I thought we were in public hearing.
He opened both.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendment to SJR 48.
Senator Cruz moves to adopt the -1 amendments to SJR 48. Discussion? Seeing none.
Comment.
Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair, I strongly support this amendment, and sometimes we make decisions based on personal experience. And before I went to law school, I did a legal assistant program at a community college, and one of the best classes I took was taught by a bankruptcy judge. Now, the bankruptcy judge is an estate judge and therefore wouldn't have been prohibited, but I definitely see the benefit of having judges teaching in our education system.
And especially bankruptcy judges to college students.
You're clever.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. The -1 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move SJR 48 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves SJR 48 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules by prior reference. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the resolution is sent as amended to the Committee on Rules. Close work session and public hearing. Okay, are you ready for this one?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
We're not done. Thank you very
much. We're not done yet. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3627. Administrator Richardson.
How about 3672? Oh, it's a typo. It's not his fault. 3672.
I'm going to open up a public hearing on 3672.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
I'm not dyslexic.
That wasn't your fault.
No, it wasn't. That's why I'm copying to my typo.
At least I prayed a dog.
On the record. This bill also is going to seem a little bit like deja vu to this committee. It deals with county surveyors. I've tried as best I can in the background to kind of indicate how this is different than what we did in 2009. As you'll recall, in that bill, we changed from appointing or electing surveyors to appointing them. However, in counties with county charters, they could still elect surveyors, and that is the population that we're dealing with here. This bill would allow those elected county surveyors in counties with a population of less than 25,000 to not be a resident of the county in which that they represent. It also includes a county surveyor in the definition of a nonpartisan office. There's an emergency and would take effect upon passage.
Okay, and we have a couple people signed up. Charles Gibbs, Gary Dejournet. Forgive me for those mispronunciations. This is originally introduced by the Committee on Rules.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Committee. My name is Charles Gibbs. I'm the Linn County Surveyor. I am an elected county surveyor, and Linn County has passed an ordinance to keep me elected there. Everything is working smooth that way. I also am the president of the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors, and they have requested that I come and try to keep this going so that we can get this some corrections made to that Senate Bill 344 created in 2009 legislation. There is 23 elected county surveyors in Oregon out of the 31 that are there. There's 9 that are appointed, and a couple of them in a couple of those counties, they had a vote of the public that created them as an appointed position. Linn County and the other 23 are elected, and most of those have either passed an ordinance or will be passing an ordinance to keep that position as an elected position. Their House Bill 3672 just corrects that issue of the nonpartisan versus the partisan. Senate Bill 344 changed that position from nonpartisan to partisan. And in doing that, it created some issues with the other counties that are elected. So we are trying to change that back in that issue. And then also the population issue of the 25,000 population being that Senate Bill 344 took that away. Gary Dejournet here is the Jefferson County Surveyor, and he lives in a different county, so he would have to give up his position or move to that county. And in that county, there isn't a licensed surveyor that could cover that county. There are several other counties in eastern Oregon that the county surveyor is actually for like 3 different counties. And the same issue they're having is that they are elected in each of those counties, but there's not enough population there to warrant them being appointed or any other issue like that. So that's what I'm here for, is to say yes, that House Bill 3672 fixes a couple of the issues that Senate Bill 344 created last year.
Okay. So did you not, do you want to?
Hi, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yeah, I'm Gary Dejournet. I just realized something. You know, I had this type out, and I put it on my letterhead because I'm also a private land surveyor. I have Dejournet Land Surveys, but I'm also a private surveyor. I know when I made the letter for the house, I had it on my county surveyor's letterhead, but basically, it's the same testimony there, pretty much. And the House unanimously passed this particular House Bill 3672. And I agree with Chuck here. I'd like to be able to see, to move this on. It's just a partisan and then a population issue that was kind of clarifies what was passed on 344.
I do remember this discussion with the assessors and surveyors that in the effort to make them more professional, it seemed like a good idea to allow them to not necessarily have to live in the county. Washington County, for example, you know, you've got a big pool of talent in Portland outside the county, and you know, you're obviously an example of that. Mm. Further discussion? Questions? Senator Cruz?
How many counties have populations less than 25, do you know?
There's probably at least, I would think, eastern Oregon, there's probably at least 10 or 15, I would think.
It would make sense for places like Wheeler.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 3672? No? I'm going to close the public hearing and open up a work session on House Bill 3672.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3672 to the floor to be passed recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3672 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Just a Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question, perhaps the committee administrator remembers. With a change to partisan from nonpartisan, was that inadvertent, or did we intend to do that in the bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonamici, honestly, I don't recall that part of the discussion. I looked back through my notes, and I think maybe it was inadvertent.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion? Questions? Senator Metzger?
Just an observation. I'm happy to support it. I think it makes a lot of sense. The thing that struck me, and the gentleman, the surveyor in Jefferson County, who's been doing that with the Deschutes Jefferson, it just, you know, you learn new things in this business all the time, and it just seems amazing to me, as a part of your particular issue, that you can stand for election when you're not an elector of the district or what you're running for anything. I mean, I never had heard anything like that before, and obviously it can be done, but I just never knew that was possible.
Mr. Sheriff, you can be a member of Congress and not reside in your district.
Yeah, but that's a federal law.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
I'm assuming that we've tested the number 25,000. I mean, this is an opportunity to make sure we get that right. I'm assuming that's been tested so that it has enough room to meet the intended purpose here.
I know probably about 3 or 4 years ago it was at 20,000, and then we came to the legislature and then raised it to 25,000. I believe that's a pretty comfortable number. Right now I wouldn't want to change it, because then if you change it from 25 to 30, then it has to go back, doesn't it, to the House?
Yes.
So I think the 25,000 is a good number. I know Jefferson County now, it's probably about 20,000, and probably I can't imagine 5,000, you know, in the next 8 or 9 years.
Not much.
Not
at
all. They will be counted as residents together.
I am surprised, too, that partisan designation slipped in.
Yeah, the county surveyors used to be partisan probably about 10 years ago, and then it changed to nonpartisan, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So you found different iron rods. The yellow ones were the Democratic right. surveyors, and the red rods two feet apart were actually somebody else's.
I think we still kind of share that idea that how do voters, I mean, no disrespect, I'm sure you're very professional and qualified, but it's very hard for voters to know, and I don't know that I'd want to sit through a debate between two surveyors.
just for the record, I know if there's a famous place, and there's three, it's called Three Surveyors and One Other Guy, and that's Mount Rushmore. Mm-hmm. Washington, Jefferson, and Lincoln were all land surveyors. And you know, when they moved out west, the county surveyors and the surveyors were kind of like scientists. So we're still kind of scientists.
Three surveyors and one other guy. That's good.
Okay.
It's going to be a punchline.
Yeah.
On the table.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Objections to House Bill 3267? Seeing none. The measure passes. And Senator Morris, to you. You could carry this bill.
Sure. If you'd like to, Mr. Chair.
Senator, the measure passes with a do pass recommendation. No other business. We dispatched what looked like a heavy workload quickly. Thank you, committee. We are adjourned.